Hey everyone, this is Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal, and this is the Fretboard Journal 75th podcast. This week we are talking to Philip Graham of Ear Trumpet Labs down in Portland, Oregon. Philip is making some incredibly cool microphones out of his house down there in Oregon, and we wanted to talk to him about them. If you saw our Milk Carton Kids video that we shot, or the Rodney Crowell video that we shot recently, if you've seen the Milk Carton Kids on the road, or any number of other roots and Americana artists with a very distinctive, almost steampunky microphone in front of them, that was likely an ear trumpet. And I just wanted to hear how these things came together, how a guy who didn't come from a microphone audio engineer background started creating these things, and get a sense of what he's all about. So we had a great talk that's coming up in just a couple of minutes. If you like these podcasts, if you like the interviews we do with artisans and luthiers and craftspeople, by all means, subscribe to this podcast via iTunes if you haven't yet. And by all means, please subscribe to the Fretboard Journal if you haven't yet. The Fretboard Journal is a quarterly magazine, put out one every 3 months, filled with amazing behind-the-scenes photos of luthiers and artists and music icons going through their gear collection, talking about how they got into this crazy universe of music. And it's a lot of fun. The issue that's out right now with Rycooter is still available. Also inside there is a very lengthy profile with Dana Bourgeois, Bourgeois Guitars, and TK Smith, and many other notables. So check that out at fretboardjournal.com if you haven't yet, and subscribe as a reader-supported magazine. We love subscriptions. And without further ado, here is Philip Graham down in Portland, Oregon. Thanks so much for listening. So with me via Skype is Philip Graham of Ear Trumpet Labs. And Philip, I have a million questions for you, but I think I first discovered your microphones a couple years ago when I saw all the bicycle cogs that you were repurposing as sort of in your microphones. How did you come about this whole microphone business thing?
Well, short answer is I was initially making them to record my daughter, who's a singer-songwriter. But I had been tinkering with DIY electronics audio stuff for a while, mainly with tube guitar amps, and then started to get into tube preamps and some recording equipment, and just starting to get a little bit more serious about recording, and realized how expensive good microphones are.
Yeah.
And as an inveterate tinkerer, because the first thing that occurs to you is, I don't know, could I build one? Could I do that more cheaply? And sure enough, you can do it pretty cheaply if you know your way around a schematic. There's a lot of circuits out there and available. And 2 years later, I had a good microphone.
Yeah.
So time is always that factor that is the unpredictable element.
And what business were you in before Ear Trumpet took over your life?
I was a computer programmer.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was way less fun.
I can only imagine. So yeah, I mean, I'm seeing your microphones now. You know, you've sort of cornered the market in a weird way on, you know, the single microphone, sort of the old Grand Ole Opry style, bluegrass style. I see a lot of roots and Americana musicians kind of huddling around your Edwina and also some of your other microphones. Try to describe to me, you know, there's a million microphones out there for a million different purposes. What is kind of your niche?
Well, that's very much it. My emphasis is on making condenser mics for live performance that bring as much as possible the sound quality of studio microphones effectively to live performance, to the stage, and that's there really aren't. There's really nobody else doing that. I mean, the conventionally, people, bluegrass bands that wanted to do that single mic style would use, you know, actual studio large diaphragm condensers, and they have a lot of problems when you try and use them in a live setting. They're just they have bad problems with feedback resistance is really the main issue, but also a lot of them don't actually end up sounding natural in a stage environment. I find they have they tend to have too much air, really. That kind of super crispy, high-end airiness that ends up sounding very unnatural when you're hearing it in a live setting. You sort of sound... It sounds like you're much closer than you actually are. And I think, to me, there's always a weird sort of psychoacoustic disjunct from hearing that sound in a large performance space. It's like you know you're not that close. You shouldn't be hearing that kind of that sort of like rustly air around the sound. And mm-hmm. to me, it sounds very unnatural. So yeah, I mean, my niche is making mics that sound as absolutely natural as possible in a live setting. And so particularly for acoustic performers where, you know, they really care about the sound that they're capturing as accurately as possible, the sound, you know, from their instruments.
Sure. And they're built like a tank, at least the ones I've seen. Mm-hmm. What so many microphones made today are people trying to emulate a classic Neumann or an RCA Ribbon or whatever. Did you kind of have to reinvent the wheel here to meet your goals, or did some of the classic microphones shape how you made the ear trumpets?
Yeah, no, I came into it completely differently because I'm just, you know, I was just tinkering in my basement and really came across, well, the visual design of them, you know, and the sort of the physical design is, of course, that I use and repurpose a lot of standard hardware parts. And that was pure practicality, you know, making a mic for myself in my basement. And I was just a lot of DIY microphone people do just buy cheap mics and repurpose the bodies. They strip the guts out and, you know, we'll redo the electronics and you can make some great sounding microphones that way. It was just never my inclination. I just wasn't attracted to that idea. So I was immediately just pawing around through stuff that I could find that I thought I could make an effective microphone body out of. Mm-hmm. And a lot of trial and error. And, you know, some copper pipe and some hardware flanges and things like that. And I came up with a housing. And partly because of that, I just never felt connected to, you know, the classic designs. And so I just sort of felt free to do whatever worked.
Yeah.
And then that also actually is what led to the emphasis on making a good live mic. Cause you know, initially these were for recording. But then some people, musicians that I know saw them and were like, oh, can I try that on a gig? That looks really cool and awesome. And then it immediately clicked into my mind like, oh, right, because they have this cool look, they really should be live mics. And so that led to a whole nother cycle of re-engineering, basically, to try and make them as good live mics as possible. So engineering for feedback control.
Sure. And where are the guts from these microphones coming from?
The capsules are Chinese-made electret condensers. Mostly I use a 26-millimeter capsule. So I have one model that uses a small diaphragm, 16-millimeter. And I'm actually really happy with the capsules that I get. I do... quality control, you know, I do a frequency sweep on every capsule that comes in. Mm-hmm. And out of every batch, I end up rejecting about a fifth of all the capsules. Not that most of them are not terrible quality. It's just I have pretty strict standards for repeatability, basically. So, you know, I just reject ones that are out of my spec range, which is more than a dB or two off at the high end or the low end. But I really like the sound quality out of these particular capsules, and you know,
are they made specifically for you, or these are
no they're generally available, and you can. They're not a common size. I don't know of any commercial microphones that, other than mine, that use them. I don't really know why. I think partly that it is partly that people really tend towards the sort of emulating the classics, and these are just a different design. They're not anything that was, they're not knockoffs of particular, you know, German capsules.
Sure. And, you know, are you finding that folks are not only wanting to use them in a live setting, but taking them into studios as well?
Yeah, definitely. And that's, again, it's just, there's been just a lot of lucky pieces to this for me. So, you know, what I find is that by concentrating on getting really good live sound, I end up having a mic that doesn't really sound like any other existing studio mics, but still has, you know, very good studio quality. And engineers really like that. It's a different flavor. It's like, oh, this isn't trying to be anything else. It has its own particular sound quality. It's quite different sounding to an engineer's ears. I mean, that they're sort of splitting hairs.
Sure,
In a lot of cases, but it doesn't really quite sound like any of the standard large diaphragm condensers. It doesn't quite sound like a ribbon. It's a very ribbony sounding condenser.
Yeah.
And I have different designs, so they'll have slightly different flavors, but that's the general tenor.
Yeah.
Let me, as you were talking about the guts, and I went straight to the capsule. The rest of the guts of the mic are all hand built, hand wired, point to point. You know, it's my own circuit, and I build the boards myself, and it's the luxury of, you know, being a craft builder. And of building your own mics, if anybody wants to do the DIY route, the luxury is that you can use all the best components, because honestly, the difference between, you know, in cost between, you know, somewhat cheaper or the very, very best components is nothing compared to the time that you're putting in. So you might as well use the best stuff.
Sure. And do you have a whole team of guys working on this stuff, or is it just kind of you?
It's mainly me. I've got one nearly full-time employee now, and I'm actually getting another in the fall, and am just signing a lease today, actually, on a space, so that
congratulations.
I will move out of the basement. It's the big graduation step for any.
It's always
any
a big
business.
Move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I noticed, you know, we have a lot of acoustic players who read the magazine and listen to this podcast, a lot of bluegrass players. When we interviewed the Milk Carton Kids a week or two ago, they've been playing with the Edwina forever. Mm-hmm. I also noticed there's of the 10 or so mics that you make, there's one called the Louise, which is also a large diaphragm condenser. How, sonically, what's going on? What's the difference between those two?
The EQ and the circuit is tuned a little bit differently. That's the main deliberate difference that I have. The Louise has a little less low end roll off because it's really designed to be used from a little bit of a greater distance. The Louise is kind of the classic, the go to for single miking a full bluegrass band, bluegrass or old time. Like, that's really it's kind of shining point. These uses the same capsule in a very similar circuit, but the circuit's just tuned a little bit differently, just to to work better with the greater distances that you have to have if you're getting, you know, four or five players around a single mic.
Yeah.
There are also subtle differences, and this is really where the black art of mic building comes in. That's just from the head basket design being different. You know, the Edwina has these sort of flanges around its little pivoting head, and the Louise has just a big spherical ball with a very kind of transparent, acoustically transparent housing around it, and is sort of hung out in space a little bit more. And those, they're very, very subtle differences that I don't think anybody can really predict. I don't think, you know, anybody in mic design is able to like model exactly what happens inside a head basket. You just kind of play with it, try different designs, push, you know, mount the capsule a little bit further forward, a little bit further back, do a lot of listening, and try and come up with something that's pleasing.
I know you've got a ton of great players who are using your microphones right now. Are you getting a lot of feedback on mics that you don't make right now that folks are wanting?
Oh, let's see. Well, I've kind of followed with the current lineup, and I've released a couple of new ones over the last year or so that have sort of filled in the things that people had been asking for the most part. So I'm not super overwhelmed at this point. I just, my latest model is geared more as a recording mic because it's a multi-pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of came about from... a friend had actually a KM86 that I heard when we were doing comparison testing in a friend's studio, and I loved the sound of that and was kind of intrigued by it because it's been, I don't know if you're familiar, it's basically an 84 but with two fixed cardioid capsules. It's like two of the KM84 capsules mounted back to back,
yeah,
and then has switching to provide a multi-pattern, and I just kind of got to thinking like, oh, I could do that because my capsules are fixed cardioid. What would it be like to just put two of them in there back to back and do some switching to get the multi-pattern? And turns out it's really interesting and sounds really great. And there's something that sort of happens again. It's just that. The difference in the head basket that you have to have and the proximity of the other capsule. So it sounds somewhat different than any of the other mics, even though it's basically using the same capsule. Even if you put it in cardioid, it doesn't really sound just like an Edwina, although it's on the face of it quite similar. So that's one.
That was the Mabel?
That's the Mabel, yeah.
Are these named for specific people, or do you just kind of...
No,
go after old timey women.
Yeah, the theme was old lady names. Yeah, we just came up with that, and I have a list I keep in my pocket, and whenever I come across one, I just write it down, and yeah, we figure it out. I was using a lot more of them. You mentioned the bite gears early on. I was doing a bunch of these acoustically. They're basically like the Louise. But they just used bicycle gears as the ring that suspended the capsule, and all of those were one-offs because I was collecting the bike gears, going to the local like neighborhood bike shop that had like a scrap day on Sundays, and I would just go and strip gears, and none of them matched. So all of those technically were like one-off designs. And I was coming up with different names for each one of them. So I was going through a lot of names at that point. But oddly, I mean, the bike gears are so kind of over the top, Portland-esque.
Yeah, it's very Portlandia.
Exactly. And they're, you know, and they're beautiful, and I like them, but they're a little much on stage for most people, I think. So, I'm happy to do them, but yeah. There actually hasn't been a ton of demand for those.
Yeah.
They're just a good marketing point.
Sure. And is the Edwina your most popular model?
Yeah, definitely. It's the most flexible I mean, it works great as a close mic, close vocal mic, close instrument mic. It's really good recording. You can use it. Like sound engineers that have it find it shines for that kind of acoustic purposes, but then it's also great when they have louder bands in. It makes a great drum overhead. It also sounds great on electric cabinets. It's a really flexible kind of a mic. And I hadn't even really thought of it. I knew it worked well in a live setting for a single player doing vocal and instrument, like playing guitar and singing. It actually took the Milk Carton Kids to sort of show me how well it could work for a duo. I don't think I had seen anybody doing it for a duo except, like group vocals. But when they originally were close mic, well, not very close miking, but they had individual mics.
Mm-hmm.
So they each had Edwinas on their vocal and an Edna, which is my small diaphragm, on their guitars. And then at some point, 9 months or so ago, I think they just started playing with using the single Edwina and loved it. And so they've switched entirely to just using that single mic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds, of course it sounds wonderful with them.
Yeah.
But they are very dedicated to the quality of their sound. And so I'm really, really honored that they've, they went through a very careful process of selecting what mic they wanted to work with.
Yeah.
I had heard that they're even looking into getting their own PA system that they would bring with them for gigs. They're that obsessed about the quality of the live sound.
Well, and there's a lot of range that they're hitting in terms of just the subtle guitar playing to the conversations they have between their songs, which are always hilarious, to the harmonies. I mean, there's a big range there that they're getting out of one microphone, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on all this. This is really cool. I have to ask, because of all the Skype and podcast interviews we've done over the years, yours is probably the best sounding input I've heard. What are you actually using right now as we're talking?
I am using an Edwina. Yep. Okay.
Plugged into what?
Oh, just through, my kind of crappy mixing desk, my little like Mackie board and then into an echo converter.
Amazing. It's a whole other line for you, podcasts.
That's a good, I should look into that. There are so many markets out there that, one I have not even begun to tap.
I take it a USB mic is not in your future though, based on your designs.
Yeah, no. Actually, that is one that people have asked or like suggested to me, like, "Oh, this would be huge. There's so many people that want to do, bedroom recording." I'm like, "Yeah, get a converter. It's not really that hard."
Got it. All right. Well, thank you so much. This was a great talk.
Great. Thank you.